This is Tuesday, August 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, rescue is still the top priority in Houston, Texas, inundated by the rains of Tropical Storm Harvey. President Trump is visiting Texas, perhaps offering even more help to the storm's victims.
Trump said he's working with Congress on funding, saying it's going to be a very expensive situation.
That's VOA White House correspondent Pete Heinlein traveling with the president. We'll talk with him. Also ahead, there are repercussions from a missile launched from North Korea that flew over Japan before crashing into the sea. It's all on today's International Edition. Heavy rain continues to pour down on parts of southeastern Texas, where Tropical Storm Harvey has already caused catastrophic flooding in one of the largest cities in the United States. The National Weather Service expected the storm to drop 25 to 50 centimeters of rain before it finally moved out of the region on Thursday. That is in addition to upwards of 90 centimeters of rain that's already fallen in some areas, including around the city of Houston. VOA's Celia Mendoza has been in Houston for the past few days, and she joins us now. Celia, the situation, at least as we are seeing it here, seems to be getting worse as far as the weather is concerned, although it might have been little later today. What does Houston look like now?
Well, it's pretty much an underwater city. Is in some areas it's impossible to even go. It seems like we're in a harbor where boats are docking, not houses should be. And the problem basically is that people are isolated locations where we cannot move to or people can get out of. And then the other issue basically is the long lines. People are trying to find food, trying to find water, trying to find milk for the little children. And as the hours go by and we see the rain come down, we see the water levels go up. Actually, today the Brazoria County officials sent a tweet that says, "Get out now." And this is because one of the levee breached the level of capacity, and they are fearing that that water is going to start coming really, really fast and get flash flood in some of the areas. We actually got a flash flood warning last night, woke us up because the alerts in our phones letting us know that this area, we're going to get one of the levees to get the water out to make sure that they can regulate the water that they are taking and the water that needs to come out. And that is obviously one of the biggest dangers that people have right now, is being able to avoid being flooded, being stuck in their cars with water, especially because with the wind and the conditions, a lot of cars have been just pushed through the streets as if they were boats.
How many people have been affected? Is there any kind of way to tell? I know there have been some estimates from the government, right?
That's right. The FEMA director said that they are expecting 450,000 people that will be registering to be able to get assistance. We know that 9,000 people have spent the night last night at the convention center, which is the largest shelter implemented in the city of Houston. As today is a capacity, so they're moving people to other shelters. They're opening high schools and little different locations. Churches are opening their doors. They're also opening one of the shelters in Dallas, which is about 3.5 hours. But to see the impact, people trying to come in won't be able to get into Houston either by airplane or even by bus or train. It's no way to get into the city of Houston. So we're talking about millions in terms of the impact. And we cannot forget that this is Houston, but on Friday, people got affected in the area of the Gold Coast where the president is visiting in Corpus Christi. And those people were evacuated to San Antonio and Austin. And they are also going to be part of the people that are trying to get help. We actually heard people that says that they had to wait for an hour, 3 hours to try to get into the list to get registered for FEMA assistance. And one of the biggest problems, this is a city of 2.3 million people. Only 15% of the people have flood insurance, and that is going to be pretty much on the shoulders of the government to be able to assist this many people, most of them without flood insurance.
VOA's Celia Mendoza reporting to us live from Houston. Once again, Celia, thank you so much for all the work you are putting in here, and we'll hopefully talk with you again tomorrow, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Celia Mendoza of VOA's Latin America division. President Trump and his wife Melania have traveled to Corpus Christi. Later, they'll be going to Austin, Texas, the capital of Texas, to receive briefings from local and state leaders and to tour an emergency operations center there. VOA White House correspondent Pete Heinlein is traveling with the president. Pete, what's on tap as far as President Trump is concerned?
In Corpus Christi, the weather today is actually pretty good. They had some big rains a few days ago. I think the eye of the storm passed pretty close there, but Corpus Christi at the moment is clear, pretty calm. But the relief efforts are in progress there. They're using that as a headquarters area. Later on, Trump and Melania Trump will head to Austin, where they're going to tour an emergency operations center. They're going to meet with the governor and get a full briefing on Hurricane Harvey from all the state leadership.
As far as the president is concerned and the tweets he has issued so far, he thinks so far so good as far as relief efforts are concerned. What do you hear that he is touting and what he's promising to Texas?
Well, he's certainly promising swift action to help those affected. He said recovery is going to be a long and difficult road, and there seems to be no doubt of that. The briefers are talking about how long and how difficult it's going to be. This is a storm like we haven't ever seen before. And even though the federal government is standing ready with whatever it can, there's no telling what it's going to take to rebuild the areas damaged first by the hurricane, but now by the floods. Trump said he's working with Congress on funding, saying it's going to be a very expensive situation. He's already approved an emergency declaration for Louisiana, and I have a feeling he's got some more up his sleeve for the harder hit areas in Texas.
Pete, you're a Texas native. Have you been in touch with family there?
I have been in touch with one of my brothers in particular, who lives in a suburb of Houston, Kingwood, Texas. And while he's above some of the worst hit areas, a little bit higher in elevation, he said that it's raining pretty hard. One night, two nights ago, he had 8 inches of rain by the time from the time he went to bed till the time he woke up. He went to bed last night, and he had received 26.2 inches at his house since the rain started on Saturday. And when he got up this morning, he was well over 29 inches. So it's still coming down pretty hard, and the forecast is for more.
The storm is now moving a little bit eastward, heading toward Louisiana. Anything in the works as far as that is concerned for the president's travel?
Well, the president will be traveling again to the flood area on Saturday, according to White House sources. And at that point, I think he'll have a better idea of the situation in Louisiana. He hasn't really been briefed on Louisiana to the same extent he's getting briefed on Texas. That's still to come.
VOA White House correspondent Pete Heinlein traveling with President Trump in Texas. Thanks, Pete.
You're welcome. My pleasure, Ira.
VOA's an International Edition's social media guru, Andrew Palczewski, is with us, joins us once again, and this still has to be big stuff on social media.
Absolutely. And as the storm moves into Louisiana, we're starting to see people focusing still on Houston and on Texas, but moving into the phase of donations and assistance. So we're seeing Facebook put up, right when I clicked on Facebook this morning, asked me to donate, and they're going to match up to $1 million in donations for the Center for Disaster Philanthropy. Apple, through its iTunes music player, is allowing people to donate, and the Red Cross actually allowing people to donate via text message, so a lot of digitally focused donations. But the one story that's getting a lot of attention, Anheuser-Busch, the maker of Budweiser and a bunch of other well-known beers, they've stopped production so they can water yep. for the relief efforts. This is something they've done in the past for hurricanes, but it's getting a lot of attention on social media. Great move for them to try to support the people of Houston and try to help them in this time of need.
And there's all kinds of contributions coming in. The baseball team there, the Houston Astros, contributing millions, same from Major League Baseball. In fact, one baseball player said every time he hits a home run, he's going to contribute $15,000. So for the pitchers who were pitching to him, he said, well, help out. Let me hit a home run.
That's one way to get people to root for you, for sure.
For sure. Andrew Palczewski with us here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, Tropical Storm Harvey continues to dump heavy rain on parts of the state of Texas. President Trump says all options are on the table following the latest North Korean missile launch, one that flew high over the northern region of Japan. That story coming up. A suicide bomber kills five outside of a Kabul, Afghanistan bank. The UN Secretary General says a two-state solution remains the only path to peace for Israel and the Palestinians. European, African leaders outlining a new approach for refugees. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and all of our VOA social media platforms. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Swedish scientists have completed a study that suggests cold air temperatures can trigger heart attacks. The observational study spanned 16 years and involved more than 280,000 patients who were treated for heart attacks at a coronary care unit. The study's first author, Dr. Momon Mohammed from Sweden's Lund University, says their findings show a seasonal variation in the occurrence of heart attacks, with a decreasing number in the summer but peaking in winter. Along with the medical data provided by the Swedish Myocardial Infarction Registry, the scientists also referred to local data gathered by hundreds of weather stations across Sweden to cross-reference conditions when the heart attacks occurred. Dr. Mohammed says the team's results consistently showed a higher occurrence of heart attacks in sub-zero temperatures. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. We continue now. President Donald Trump says all options are on the table following the latest North Korean missile launch. This missile, which flew high over the northern region of Japan early Tuesday Asia time, was likely an intermediate-range ballistic missile, according to American officials. Trump said in a statement, President Trump did in a statement released by the White House, that North Korea has signaled its contempt for its neighbors, for all members of the United Nations, and for minimum standards of acceptable international behavior. The presidential statement concluded, again, all options are on the table. When asked by VOA on Tuesday morning what specifically he planned to do about North Korea, the president replied, we'll see, without elaborating before boarding the Marine One helicopter on the South Lawn. Trump spoke on the phone with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe following the launch. The leaders, according to the White House, agreed North Korea does pose a grave and growing direct threat to both countries. The U.N. Security Council was set to meet later today to discuss tougher sanctions. Earlier this month, the council unanimously voted for more strict sanctions following two intercontinental ballistic missile tests. South Korea, which is in the midst of joint military exercises with the United States, also condemned the launch and conducted bombing drills at a firing exercise area. But the news agency Yonhap quoted the unification minister as saying his government will continue seeking dialogue to resolve tensions peacefully. Melissa Hannum is a senior research associate in East Asia Nonproliferation Matters at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies in California. She spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty about the missile, and she says it appeared to have been a Hwasong-12 and was not a successful launch.
The missile failed and broke into at least three pieces, so it's hard to discriminate other missiles from it since the missile was behaving unusually to begin with. I also find it really interesting that they launched it from the location they launched from, the Sunmun area where Pyongyang International Airport is located, because launching a missile you don't have confidence in so close to your capital is quite a risk.
Exactly what is this Hwasong-12?
The Hwasong-12 is an intermediate-range ballistic missile, and it is designed to carry a warhead, a payload. It is not a space launch vehicle, like the Unha-3, for example. So it's not the kind of rocket you would use to launch a satellite.
Would this missile have reached Guam, or could it have reached North America if it were fully operational with a nuclear warhead?
If it was a Hwasong-12, and if it was carrying a payload of around 500 kilograms, perhaps even a little less, it probably could reach Guam, but not the mainland U.S.
A lot has been said in recent days that North Korea was showing restraint. Does this change the picture?
Oh, yeah. North Korea is not showing any restraint. with the exercises happening in its neighborhood, it seems to be doing one of its cyclical provocative periods right now. Overflying Japan is a very risky game for them. This is not a period of time where they're rolling things back at all.
Were you surprised, Melissa, that Japan did not attempt to shoot down this missile?
Well, it depends on the altitude that the missile was at when it was flying over Japan.
According to one report, the missile reached an altitude of about 550 kilometers and flew a distance of about 2,700 kilometers.
So using that information, that's how we would make an early guess that it was a Hwasong-12, but it was probably at too high an altitude, you know, in the period where Japan's ballistic missile defense would have sensed it. They're able to target missiles that are aimed at Japan, but not missiles that are just overflying Japan.
Melissa Hannum says she doubts that a little more of the effectiveness can come from tightening sanctions. She does suggest dialogue with North Korea, as distasteful as that might be for Japan, may be the only way to lessen the nuclear and missile threat. The United Nations Refugee Agency is urging Bangladesh to give refuge to Rohingya Muslims amid reports that people fleeing violence in Myanmar's western Rakhine state are being turned away. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UNHCR reports some 5,200 people have entered Bangladesh from Myanmar since late Thursday, following an attack by Rohingya fighters against 30 police stations. The agency says thousands of people who fled, fearing reprisals by the Myanmar military, reportedly are stuck along the Myanmar side of the border. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards tells VOA his agency cannot confirm the reports. He says the refugees are in many places along the border and staff is unable to be present at every location.
Clearly there are people fleeing safety and needing refuge, need access. Of course, we're in touch with the Bangladeshi authorities. These appear to be isolated instances from what we can see at the moment, so I don't think there's a systematic thing going on here. Do we have access to the populations to help them inside on the other side of the border? No, we don't at the moment.
Edwards says the UNHCR cannot verify reports that hundreds, if not thousands, of people have been killed and injured in Rakhine State.
We've seen differing reports of a number of fatalities, including statements that have been made by the Myanmar authorities. We're not in position to verify those. We are appealing for borders to remain open. We do think it's very important that people be allowed to seek safe refuge.
This is the worst outbreak of violence in Rakhine State since October, when Rohingya fighters killed 9 police officers, triggering a mass exodus. A recent report by the International Organization for Migration says around 87,000 people have fled to Bangladesh over the past 6 months. Members of the Rohingya community are ineligible for citizenship in Myanmar because of a controversial 1982 law. Predominantly Buddhist Myanmar has faced criticism for its treatment of the Rohingya minority. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
We continue with VOA's International Edition. There are two ways to deal with climate change, either stop it or slow it through controlling emissions or adapt to it. Chances are we're going to have to do both over the next 80 years. In the dry areas of Texas and California, researchers are getting started on the adapting part. VOA's Kevin Enox has more.
When people think of climate change, they often think of a future with extreme storms, bringing too much water. But scientists in Texas and California are planning for a future with a lot less. USC professor Sarah Feekins spoke to VOA by Skype.
It's always a challenge having enough water for plants to grow, and especially in dry years. So that's the motivation behind trying to figure out if we can develop crops that are more resilient to drought.
Feekins says higher temperatures mean higher rates of evaporation, and that means potentially less water for everyone. So the research team began planting crops and not giving them enough water.
So here we're looking at these wheat varieties, and they have been bred. They've been bred over sort of about 10 years, selecting for traits that mean that they will grow well in the dry conditions of Texas. And so we're simply seeing which of these 10 cultivars perform better in dry conditions, in the different sites, the different soils, and the different climates.
What Feekins and her team learned is that when things get hot or plants get deprived of water, they produce more of the natural wax that coats their leaves. The more wax on the leaves, the more water stays in the plant.
So at the higher and drier location, when we grow the same crops, 10 different cultivars, all of them produce more wax. It's a little bit like on a dry day, you know, you might put some lip balm on your lips. Plants actually put more wax on the surface of their leaves at the drier location.
The team was able to grow bountiful crops with 25% less water, and they learned one other surprising thing. The wax that coats plant leaves also holds carbon.
If we could double the waxiness of plants, it might actually help sequester carbon in the soils.
That's an added bonus in a future that will likely have too much carbon and not enough water. Kevin Enox, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com and our social media platforms. Thanks to Director Patrice Martin, Engineer John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During his recent visit to Santiago, Vice President Mike Pence spoke warmly of the strategic partnership and valued friendship between the United States and Chile. Referring to Chile as a beacon of freedom in the Western Hemisphere, the Vice President hailed Chile's economic success as an example for other nations across Latin America to enact their own market-based reforms to spur growth and generate prosperity for their citizens. Noting that Chile's embrace of free markets ultimately gave rise to a free society overall, the Vice President also underscored the strong commercial relations between the United States and Chile. The two-way trade in goods between the countries in 2016 totaled over $20 billion, stemming in large part from the U.S.-Chile Free Trade Agreement signed in 2004, and resulting in a 260% increase in trade since that time. Chile is also the one country in Latin America that participates in the U.S. Visa Waiver Program. In addition, Chile is a valued partner of the United States in its role in promoting regional security, notably in Central America. In his press conference with Chilean President Michelle Bachelet, Vice President Pence also praised Chile for its support in the face of North Korea's provocative behavior and for its clear statements in promoting a stable and a nuclear-free North Korean peninsula. He urged Chile, however, to do even more to isolate North Korea and break all diplomatic and commercial ties to the rogue nation. Finally, Mr. Pence expressed gratitude for Chile's leadership in standing with the Venezuelan people and condemning the Maduro regime. He emphasized that the United States will continue to bring the full measure of its economic and diplomatic power to bear until democracy is restored in Venezuela. And he expressed confidence that working with all our allies across Latin America, we can achieve a peaceable solution to the crisis facing the Venezuelan people. The United States cherishes its friendship and strong ties with Chile. And because both countries recognize that freedom is the source of their prosperity and security, Vice President Pence predicted that the United States and Chile will continue to achieve great progress for our people and our hemisphere.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.